This is an interview with Connie McCready at her home in Northeast Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is June 6th, 1994, and this is tape 14, side 1.
Well, you were asking me about staff.
Yes.
And as I was saying, this gal had worked herself up a nice handy lunch hour time, which was fine if it didn't cause a problem. But the trouble was, she wasn't there when I needed her. It wasn't as if I had someone else who could take care of things, and I would be having meetings with someone, and the phone would be ringing, you know. And this other fellow, I don't know what he did, but he was just never around. And he kept telling me that he'd be happy to be my driver, and at that time I didn't feel I needed a driver. I needed an executive assistant,
right,
someone who could take on some of the responsibilities. But the gal who was the secretary did not want any assistance. She wanted to continue doing everything herself. But anyway, I finally told her that I didn't think that I was sorry. I didn't think this arrangement would work out of having that hour and a half lunch hour. And besides, I understood that it wasn't really in accordance with the personnel bureau's orders. I checked on this first, and they're supposed to have a 15-minute break in the middle of the morning and a 15-minute in the middle of the afternoon as a rest time, not to be time that you could add up for a lunch hour to go shopping and stuff. So, but I didn't go heavily on that. But finally, I put my foot down on it. I just said it was too hard until we just didn't have anybody to take her place in there. And, and that time of day, I had to put my commitments ahead of hers.
So you replaced her?
No, I kept her there until she. I kept her until she retired, but I did have her do her. I changed that to be her a lunch hour at a time that was set by me.
Why didn't you replace her?
Well, I don't know. She was competent, and I didn't. You know, when you first come on like that, you don't know. Would I be improving it to have two new people in there?
Right.
And and I'm kind of soft. She wasn't being bad. She just was in her rut, and this was the way she'd organized her life. And there were only a couple or so more years before she was going to retire. And she was a competent person. It just wasn't all that delightful.
Yeah.
But then you ask about staff. Gradually, I can't recall for sure how I did that. I think I hired Jeff Morris, who was a captain in the fire department and just a neat guy. He was their public relations man. And he grew up in the fire department. He was a little kid. His mother had left him in Portland in her apartment and went off to Alaska. And he was in grade school. Can you imagine? I can't imagine. And he took care of himself. And he used to go down to the fire department that was near him. And the guys raised him.
Huh.
They raised that kid, and that's what he wanted to be, was a fireman and firefighter, and he started out I think he joined underage, lied about his age, and he worshipped the Bureau. And if there was anything to be known about the fire department, he knew it, so I brought him into my office as my exec. And he was the kind of person who knew everything else that was going on in the city. Public relations, real friendly guy, and he went around and he knew everyone, and everyone loved Jeff, and Jeff knew where all the bodies were buried, and he was invaluable to me. He could tell me what was behind so many of the things that were happening that I couldn't figure out. You know, you don't walk in cold and realize, you know, that...
Yeah.
This is happening because of this. For example, some of the things that I couldn't understand was when we'd see a street vacation being proposed. Very often, usually from Frank Ivancy, which kind of surprised me because he didn't have public works or anything. Well, I finally figured this out, was that people... Some of the businessmen would ask to have a street vacated, and they owned the property on both sides. And so by vacating that street, they got themselves a huge block of far more valuable property than two pieces, let alone the addition of all that free property, street property they picked up, which is, would vary from a 20 to a 40 foot width the block long. Uh-huh. That's a lot of free property to pick up.
Yeah.
And that's probably why he had some of his healthy campaign contributions. I don't know. But I didn't understand any of that stuff to begin with. But things like that, you find out. And then after, I sent the fellow back to the police department. He was the guy who had taken over, you know, who had been the exec for Stanley Earle.
Right.
I can't remember how I got him back to the police department, but at least he had his job, and he had taken, I guess, temporary leave from it to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was early. Jeff did a lot of work.
How many people did you have on your staff altogether?
Well, at that point, I still had just the two, just the secretary and Jeff. And then I can't recall how one by one, how it would happen when I would, for example, when I was assigned the communications, I had to have somebody working on that cable TV thing. That was a very heavy, and it was just all kinds of pitfalls. There were landmines all through that. I'm just so pleased that I was able not to step on any of them. But and I hired Kennan McKee. Actually, she had come in to complain to me about something about the cable TV situation. And while she was complaining and going on very earnest and sitting there spieling away, I was impressed with her knowledge of what she was doing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how I picked my staff. Most of my staff used to laugh about this. They'd say, "How do you do this, Connie? You do all the talking, and then you hire somebody." I don't want them to be embarrassed. I feel so sorry for them when I'm interviewing them that I try and make them feel uncomfortable. But I don't know. I do it by feel. But, I'm so pleased with myself for getting Kennan. It was so funny. Mm-hmm. As she went on and was talking, I said, just a minute. I said, would you like a job? And she gives me this funny look. What's this woman trying to do?
Right.
Very suspicious of me when she came in. She was just sure that I was going to be a crook and trying to do stuff, because she knew what had happened in the East about cable.
I bet that threw her off base.
She was just dumbfounded. And then I went in and told my current exec. I think by that time I was able to have a second staff person in there, because I think Jim Hansen was working for me then. I think he and Jeff Morris shared an office. But Jeff was thought he was sort of in charge of hiring. And I said, I think I found myself the person to handle the cable. Mm. And he said, "Well, you didn't say anything to her, did you?" And I said, "Yes." I did. He said, "Let me interview her. You shouldn't have." And I said, "You can interview her." But I said, "I think I've decided to hire her." And, he was just really upset. But he ended up agreeing. She was outstanding. My golly, between Kennan and myself, we got all kinds of national awards. Not all kinds, so maybe two or three awards for our what we did with the cable study. And I give it all to Kennan. She's just was tremendous.
Really?
I was so lucky. I had the reputation of having the best staff in City Hall, and I absolutely agree with that. I did. They were wonderful. I have one or two exceptions to prove the rule, but they didn't last long. And it was just, it's hard to say how I got them. One particular case, one that came out so well, and I had to fill had another slot that I could fill in there. And I interviewed four or five people, at least I got it down to two or three who were just really outstanding, and I couldn't decide amongst them. And this was kind of late in the day, very late in the day, and I was about closed up, and nobody was, just a couple of staff people were there mm-hmm. visiting with me, and the phone rang, mm-hmm. and it was one of the girls, Jennifer. There were two Jennifers who had applied, and this was a Jennifer calling to know how if I'd decided yet, and wanted to, if there was anything else that she could say, could answer any questions. And I thought, by George, that's going to be the one. She had the push
right.
to follow it up, and I was never sorry. She was outstanding. She's mm-hmm. the one who I had assigned to the Mount Hood Freeway debate. Oh, that was such a tough one. Remember, mm-hmm. we talked about yes. that. And she's the one that went through, took all this stuff off of the mayor's office and the staff, and never complained to me about the runaround they were giving her and the tough time. And she just kept on studying and working on it and mm-hmm. and came up with her recommendation, and she was dead right.
What was the first project that you worked on after you got into the office? Did you have something that you were intending on doing once you got in there?
Oh, no. No, I didn't. I was just surprised that I got elected, I think.
Well, what did you end up focusing on first? I know you had all these bureaus just
well,
to
I had so much to learn
yeah.
just to do the store. And nothing had been done by my predecessor, which I did not know at the time. It was, so it was a learning experience for me. Right. And then there were projects and problems that surfaced when I got to learn about the bureaus. For example, I discovered that we did not have any minority members of the fire bureau and or women, and that we had to face this. And come up with some kind of a solution, and it wasn't all that easy. You could imagine, and we had a hard time with the black community itself. Then when we tried, I had a neat man a fire captain that took on the job of the training, and he went out and recruitment, and he would go out to the taverns in the black neighborhoods. That's their clubs.
Right.
In effect, you know.
Sure.
And the trouble was he'd get guys to sign up to come down, and then they would go back to their taverns, and then they'd be called Nabiscos, and they'd get chewed out by their peers, and so pretty soon they would drop out rather than lose the friendship of their peers. They were. I had never thought about it from that point of view. I thought, but here the other blacks were making these guys drop out. It was so frustrating, and particularly for this neat man who was trying to handle the recruitment and the training. But they didn't show up, and they wouldn't show up for the training sessions. He'd go back down to the taverns, and half the time he was able to get them to come on back, and some of them made it on through. Some never did. They just they couldn't take not being they couldn't take the being ridden by their peers. Mm. But so I had my hands full, and we were trying to work on the lists for as I mentioned a little bit ago, the selection lists, and that was Fire Bureau. What else? Oh, I can't remember now. Yeah. What the
you know, I saw an interesting quote, and it actually refers to your time in the legislature, but I was wondering about it in terms of your coming into City Hall. I think this was from the Oregonian. It said, she claims she was not effective during her two legislative terms. Shunned by Republican power structure, she never found a mentor to show her the political ropes. And I was wondering whether you did at City Hall. Did you find anybody that was willing to kind of help you along, any of the other commissioners or any of the people in the bureaucracy, or somebody that would say, Connie, I know you're new here, what can I do to help you figure this all out? Or did you just have to wade through it all on your own?
Well, it was pretty much on my own, although Kerry was a help when I would ask him for help. But I did not want to presume upon his time, and particularly with the treatment I was getting from his staff person who, when I'd go in to see him. And but I'd go down, I remember I went down to Buck Grayson's office one time and asked him, you know, how do you go about seeing Kerry? Do you call and make an appointment, or do you just, I just walk in. And so, and I said, well, what about the receptionist? She was a dear. The receptionist was a dear. This was one of his executive assistants that were, I was talking about the the black hat.
Right.
And it never smiled. Oh, intimidating lady. But, and so I said, oh, okay. So the next time I went in, because otherwise I would just go in and I'd sit, then sit out there in the waiting room while people went in. So I just walked on in and kind of peeked around his door, and if he wasn't busy, and I'd ask him when I wanted to ask him. And then by that time I'd brought Jeff aboard pretty soon, and he told me, and it was hard for him, bless his heart, to have to tell me this, but he said that that he thought it'd be a good idea if I called and made an appointment, or didn't just walk in. And it had come from this nice gal who was the receptionist. And I knew she was a sweet thing. I thought, oh my God, what do I do? You know? And so then I told Jeff how that had happened. And so I said, okay, well then I'll call first and see if I can make an appointment. And then I did. That was so ironic. Yeah. Here I was trying to find out what I was supposed to do, and I was getting wrong signals. Yeah. But no, they were, I didn't feel that I couldn't ask them something. Mm-hmm. But
you didn't have anybody that was guiding you.
No. Yeah. I would love to have had someone take me by the hand.
What was your, did you have a typical work week? Was there a typical schedule for the week? You know, like meeting, council meetings on Wednesday, you know, that
well,
kind of
we had a certain amount of stuff, and depending on how heavy my workload was with the various bureaus and what commissions I was on. For example, I was the city's representative on the Metropolitan Service District, which was a big responsibility. And I had meetings, those meetings, I don't remember how often they were. I think they were every other week, something like that. Mm-hmm. But I had certain things every week, of course. We had the pre-council sessions, which were on Tuesday mornings. We had the Wednesday morning council session and the Wednesday afternoon council session and the Thursday afternoon council session. And then we would have a weekly luncheon meeting in the early days with the rest of the council. I mentioned that earlier. Then we would just have to work in around that, my appointments with the various bureau heads.
Sure.
And once in a while, we didn't have hard and fast every single week a meeting with every single person. If they didn't feel they had something to talk to me about, or if I didn't have something I wanted to talk to them about, well, there's no point in just meeting for meeting's sake, you know.
Sure.
But the fire chief in the early days always came. He didn't always have anything of much to say or didn't always bring a staff person. But sometimes there were some really good sessions. But by and large, well, I sat on a number of things. I was the city-county liaison. What was that? For the council, I guess. I was the council's liaison, and we have meetings on occasion. But
how were meetings conducted? Did they have any particular format?
At the council?
Well, at the council, I know they did.
Yeah.
But you know, for your bureau meetings and things like that, were they?
Oh, no. Very informal.
Very informal.
Yeah. I would have a staff person with me who would be serving as the secretary, in effect, taking notes, and then whoever the bureau chief was, and whoever he wanted to bring to outline a program to me, or a problem to, of some sort. And then when one of them was through, they could excuse themselves and get on back. They didn't all have to sit there and be... But sometimes when they were sharp minds, and a lot of them were, I enjoyed having their participation in solving something that would come up, because most
even
of
it
these,
wasn't related to their
own department. Because they were all in, say, public works, the ones at that group, and they'd all had certain and interrelationships all the time, and they knew each other, and sometimes I'd get a really neat suggestion from a fellow who was there for a different purpose altogether. It was, and they became more and more relaxed. The more relaxed they became with working with me, the better, the more fruitful those meetings were. I'd get some, just, we'd get some really outstanding work done on some of those sessions.
What about in the council meetings? Did they have a, did they go by parliamentary procedure?
Yeah, we did Masons.
Masons.
We didn't...
Isn't that what the...
Oh, wait a minute. The legislature was Masons.
I was just going to say, the legislature
I take that back.
Was it Robert's rules of order?
I'm trying to think. I was thinking it wasn't Robert's, but there's only the two, aren't there?
As far as I know, there are only
as
two.
As far as I know, we must have followed Robert's on the council. Unless they had Masons also. We didn't have a parliamentarian on that council. No, and so, most of them didn't know from nothing
so
about
who
it.
Who acted as the...
I ended up being the parliamentarian, in effect, because I had had two sessions in legislature where they really, so much was accomplished or defeated by using parliamentarian ploys. There we go. They'd, oh my, I couldn't... When I went down there green and knew nothing about, I thought I knew parliamentary procedures. Oh, no way. And I'd never heard of Masons when I went to legislature. And things would happen, and I'd be sitting there with my mouth hanging open and think, what's happened here? Yeah. What's gone on? And you never would, and I'd find out afterwards. When you'd ask somebody what happened, they love to be asked, you know. People just love to be an authority on something to an eager listener. And since I didn't have any mentor, I took advantage of all of that I could to learn.
This is in the legislature.
In the legislature. So I had a background that none of the council had. They were all... there were so many attorneys in legislature, so they were very aware of a lot of that. And there were an awful lot of the old schoolboys who had been there for a long time and utilized those ploys. But on the council, there were no attorneys until Neil came. And I don't know, I don't know how much.
What kind of tactics would be used for in the council meetings for... to get something passed or something defeated?
Oh, I'm talking about legislature.
I know you are.
I don't think that there were that many ploys at on the council because I don't think they were aware of how they worked. They just didn't have that much of that. However, there's the emergency clause.
I was just going to ask you. Yeah, because that's a way of getting around. That's getting it so that it's
goes into effect
maybe discussed and acted on in one meeting instead of at least three meetings, right?
Yeah, you could have two meetings you could have first and second reading the same day.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
And then the third reading would have to be, I think it was a month later, wasn't it? Or else that maybe it was the following week and then it became effective a month later. I'm not sure.
Well, I think, wasn't the emergency ordinance effective immediately?
Immediately, yes.
And otherwise it would be 30 days, yeah.
Yeah, but 30 days from the week, the second reading.
Oh, from the second reading.
I mean, the third reading, actually.
Oh.
It happened two times. The first and second reading was at the same time.
I understand.
they would read it, and then he just would repeat it, and then that was the first and second reading.
Right.
And then, you had to be in a unanimous vote to get the emergency clause.
Uh-huh.
And you couldn't have, and you had to have at least four present to have the emergency clause. So if there were just three present, you could pass something, but it wouldn't become effective. I think that they have to be read a third reading the following week then, just as if there was a negative vote. But it had to be unanimous and at least four present to have the emergency clause.
Did very many people arrange certain ordinances to pieces of legislation to come through the council, knowing who was going to be there, who was not going to be there?
I've often suspected that such a thing may have happened, but it was a little difficult for them to do that because for something to go on the council agenda, it has to be filed how much ahead of time. I can't remember. There's a number of days ahead of time, and then if you want to bring something up on that particular day, if that much time was not available and it was needed to come up right away, a commissioner's staff person would have to run around to the various commissioners' offices and get enough signatures on for it to be brought up.
Could a commissioner ever have somebody act on his behalf at a meeting? At a
council meeting? No.
No,
they couldn't. And the only way that I could imagine they could get something on the agenda would be if they found out that somebody was going to be gone and then at the last minute send a staff person around. But still, be kind of tricky to try and do that, but...
If you know somebody, if you know the mayor is going to be at the Council of Mayors or something like that, then and there's nothing they can do to, regardless of how you schedule it, can they challenge the scheduling of something so that it appears only when they're there? I mean, if for instance, Neil knew he was going to be out of town at some kind of function, and Ivancy was trying to get something passed and was scheduling it so that it would come up for its third reading while he was gone, could Neil request that the third reading be done after he gets back or before he leaves? Was that kind of maneuvering
going
on?
The mayor could continue something for the amount of time that he wanted to. He could say continue it to 2 weeks since I will be gone on such and such a day.
Right.